Blog Talk Radio.
Listen, dear friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am doing great. Ready for another week of futuristic goodness here.
Yeah, well, we've been working our way through Thomas Frey's 72 stunning things in the future that will be common 10 years from now that don't exist today, and we've got another great topic from his list that we're going to be going over tonight. I called this show Super Pills and Robo Doctors, but basically this is all just advances in health technology that we can maybe be looking for within the next 10 years. I like the 10-year time frame because you know, if you just do a list of future health technologies, of course, if you don't put a cap on when it's going to happen, you can say anything, right?
Right. Yeah.
Number one,
who's going to call you on it, right? I mean, if it's
exactly.
If it's 150 years in the future. Number two, we really have no frame of reference for, you know, how long it'll take to get to, you know, things that are super advanced anyway. So yeah, I like the 10-year window too. We can actually say something with, you know, not perfect accuracy, of course, but we can say something that actually we have some basis for believing, you know, and that's, I like a 10-year window too.
Well, and what's great about it is we can come back in 10 years, we'll have these shows. We can come back in 10 years and we can check. We can say, well,
yeah,
we got that one. We didn't get that one. And if we're right, we're geniuses. If we're wrong, we go, well, you know, it's Tom Frey's list. Don't look at us. What do you mean?
It's a win-win.
No,
well, you know, we've been doing this show in one form or another since 2005, and a lot of the stuff we said back in, you know, in the early days of the show has come to pass. And so, you know, and occasionally we've under-promised, right? We've said things that turned out to be way too conservative. So, you know, who knows? I like this list. We ought to get into it.
Yeah, in fact, you know, a couple weeks ago when we did our 500th show week, that was one of the themes, was how much things had gone beyond what we had expected. So let's look at some of these. I agree. The first one, hyper-personalized, precision-based pharmaceuticals produced by 3D pill printers. There's your super pills right there. What a great idea. So we're talking about medicine that is just for you. It's just for you, maybe right down to the DNA level, right down to the molecular level, produced by 3D pill printers. Probably not in your home, I would think.
Yeah,
I would guess this would be down at your
local pharmacy for purposes of just making sure you're not, you know, producing drugs that you don't need to be taking, you know, for your addiction. I think that you know these things these pill printers would be illegal to personally own, I would imagine, and would be at your local pharmacy, just to make sure you're not abusing it, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it just, you know, it's the idea of the age of the individual coming, right?
Right.
We live in kind of a mass-produced world, and we're going to be making the turn to a world where everything is individualized because we'll have that capability to imprint that level of personalization, literally imprint that level of personalization onto any product, where before the economies of scale insisted that everything be mass produced. But what's the what's the impact of hyper personalized precision based pharmaceuticals, do you think? Will we be that much healthier or that much just more demanding in terms of what we get, or maybe it'll be a combination of those two things.
Well, you know, we will be healthier, and we also will put up with less. And that's kind of the way it is, isn't it? You know, when it takes us about 30 seconds to adapt to some great, huge thing that's world-shattering technology, we adapt to it in 30 seconds, and like, and 30 seconds later, we're already taking it for granted. It's sort of the way you know, human nature is. But yeah, one of the things that it will allow is, you know, right now you produce drugs for the masses, and so if your body chemistry is just different enough, you're going to experience some pretty heavy duty side effects, right?
Right.
And you know, to the point that it may not be the right drug for you, and they well, let's try this other drug that we also is also mass produced, and you get a different set of side effects. What if they're tailoring something specific to you? And let's imagine a situation, Phil, where they have like a complete virtual model of you and your body chemistry as close as they can possibly get. You know, they can do a drug trial with a virtual Phil, or maybe a bunch of virtual Phils, right? And you know, and this is all, of course, taking place virtually. And they say, well, this particular chemical, this particular molecule, is exactly what Phil needs. And we're gonna, after running trials on the virtual Phil, and you know, let's mass produce it and put it in a bottle for Phil to take. And I think that's what we're talking about.
Or you can find that. I think you made a comment that, you know, 3% of the virtual fills you tried it on, it caused, you know, dry mouth, or maybe, you know, more damaging 10%, it caused heart palpitations or something like that. You know, all the fine print you get at the end of the pharmaceutical ads applied to one person, right? It's like, you know.
Right. And these are in these drug trials, of course, it would probably be so much more informative, because again, these virtual drug trials would be based on you and you alone, right? So
yeah, I'll tell you what I think, Stephen. I think that we'll have the pills to some extent in 10 years. What you're describing might be more than 10 years out, and that could just be that could be me wearing my Kindle blinders once again. I could just not see that this is all
The Kindle blinders, Phil, for our audience, that's referring to the fact that you just weren't buying this whole digital books outselling paper books a few years back, and I said it's going to happen, Phil.
How that could ever happen? But I you know, subsequently saw the light, and you know, if they're able to do this within 10 years, that'll be awesome. I'll be very pleased.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. Ingestible data collectors. This is another one that I question the 10-year window. So let's talk about this. Ingestible data collectors filled with sensors to give a daily internal health scan report. Well, this is an awesome idea. Yeah, this is the 1960s Raquel Welch movie, Fantastic Voyage, right? You don't have little people, but you got little robots being shot into your bloodstream, gathering all the info and providing a health scan and report. I mean, so that's what we're talking about here, right? Basically, you're going to load your body up
with
little machines.
I think you're talking about nanobots, Phil, which is, I think, beyond our 10-year window for sure. If you were to take a pill and it just daily, you know, replenishes you with more nanobots that can report on what's going on with your health, and, of course, you lose nanobots through your sweat and all other ways, right?
And
so you have to replenish it. If we're talking about that, yeah, I'd put that out 20 years at least.
Okay.
But if we're talking about an ingestible data collector that's like in pill form, a macro bot, you know, something, if you pulled the pill apart, you could see, hey, that's a little robot, and it's got a little little sensors on it and little collectors, and you know, it's something you swallow, it collects information throughout your dietary tract, and then you know, perhaps it is unable to report properly until it's excreted, right? At which time it gives a report at that time. I think that something like that's definitely within the 10-year window.
Okay. So the difference between what you're describing and what I'm describing is yours is more it's bigger and it's more passive, right? So it's
right.
It's not going to have access to the whole body, it sounds like. If you ingest it, it's going to...
Well, you know, it could definitely, you know, do basically a blood test, you know, tell what's going on with the with your digestive tract. And, you know, it could do a lot of things. But, you know, what you're talking about with nanobots, they might not, you know, something like that might not just collect data. It might actually treat.
Right, exactly.
Problems. I mean,
you know,
that's beyond the 10-year window. I feel pretty confident that that's beyond 10 years.
I'm picturing something that once it gets in, it can set a course for the lungs, right, and go see what's going on there, or up to the brain, right, and see what's going on there.
That's beyond 10 years, pretty sure. But you know, a simple data collector. There's probably trials with what I'm talking about, a macro bot that can be swallowed and then, you know, collect data and then report upon exiting your body what it found out. I think that's actually being tested right now. So,
we shouldn't let my overreading of this or like, well, we're not going to have what I just said, so it's not very important. We shouldn't let my, you know, tone of voice push this in the wrong direction, because we're already so used to having so much information that
right.
we don't, you know, we tend to take it for granted how much information we actually have available, or what a big leap this would be, right? This kind of daily information, even if it's what you described rather than what I described, that's a huge benefit.
Imagine the, you know, the report that it could give to your, you know, shoot to your smartphone and then maybe straight onto your doctor from there. You know, and how much information that could give you, you know, versus what we have now, Phil, which is, you know, we wait until we feel bad
right.
and then show up at the doctor's office, you know, and fix what's broke, you know, whereas this sort of the daily monitoring, you know, if you could have it to where, you know, some sort of AI system is monitoring it and says, you know what, just based on our algorithms, we're really not liking what we see here with Steven. We probably should call him into the doctor's office now and do a little more thorough checkup, because you know, just our algorithms are saying that it's probable that he is. He's at the beginning of battling flu or something, you know.
Right.
And maybe, you know, we could give him some antivirals that would knock that out before it really gets going. You know,
I think forewarned is forewarned, and
that's right.
We're going to be in a huge way, whether it's full blown, you know, Raquel Welch, or just some good sensor data getting in there. Of course, the idea of Raquel Welch is pretty.
Yeah, that's a good idea at any time.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah,
all right.
Let's
move on. Prosthetic limbs controlled by AI. This is interesting to me because I think we're already seeing amazing things happening with prosthetic limbs, with direct interfaces to the, you know, neural interfaces to the brain. I'm assuming that what he means here by AI is that it's acting as the interface with the brain, right? You don't really need an AI to control your prosthetic limb, assuming you've got, you've made the motor connections to your own spinal cord and your own nervous system, right? Or
maybe he's thinking, you know, a lot of times we see prosthetic limbs that are real herky jerky and are not smooth in their movements and things like that. You know, we have something, you know, with our limbs, our healthy limbs, Phil, that, you know, called muscle memory, right? To some extent, our arms and legs kind of know what to do on their own, and we just sort of generally tell them what to do,
right?
And they just kind of go about their work to some extent. Maybe he's talking about something that kind of takes the place of that muscle memory and does that. You know, we get up on our artificial legs and tell it to walk us across the room, kind of thing, and we don't have to be concentrating on every single movement in order to make it happen. You know, maybe it's something like that. I'm reminded, of course, of Spider-Man 2 and the problem with that Dr. Octavius had with his AI controlled extra limbs. You know what I'm talking about?
Appendages, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and how that kind of there was some. He had like a device that would keep them under his control, and of course, immediately that's destroyed, and the legs, extra legs, start taking over his mind, and so obviously you'd have to you would need to have an artificial intelligence that was involved in this that I'm being silly to some extent, but you have to have something that was well within the control of the user.
Right. So. Right. But it does. You make a great point that there's probably a lot of capability that even the best interface that we can create between the brain and this kind of artificial nervous system. There's a limit to how much mobility, how much refinement of movement that we'll be able to achieve with that hard interface. You're going to need something to govern that. You're going to need something to kind of fill in those gaps, and I think that's where the AI comes in. All right, next one,
right.
Real-time blood scanners. This is awesome. I mean, when you think about this, and I know that we're fairly close to this, but the idea here is when you when you go to the doctor, I still have this, right? I assume everybody still has this. The doctor wants to talk to me about something. It's like, okay, we'll go in on Thursday and get the blood draw, and then I'll see you Monday, right?
Right.
And we'll discuss. It's like, what do you want is, hey, doctor, I don't know what's going on with me. And he's like, well, here, let's get some blood. And boom, let's find out what the situation is right here in real time, right? And it seems to me that all the technology to make that happen pretty much already exists. What we're talking about here is infrastructure, right, and kind of a change
right.
in process that would enable this to happen.
Yeah, we're talking about the difference between come pick up your photos, in a week back in 1970 and the one-hour photo processors that followed in the 1980s, right?
Right.
That kids is what we used to have before digital cameras. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think that that's a very realistic within 10 years, and it's just a matter of just additional computation brought to the problem. And
right.
I think that can happen real quick. And again, this you're talking about it within the context of the doctor's office. The first thing we were bringing up, one of the first things with the ingestible data collectors, you could be getting real-time blood scans on a daily basis that would be shared perhaps, with your doctor. So, or at least some sort of AI that might pass it on to the doctor if need be, right?
Exactly. A little alert comes up when something does, your blood sugar doesn't look right, when you're...
Yeah. Pre-cancer, indications.
Liver enzyme is out of whack or something like that. I mean,
and the doctor gets a little text, Phil was looking healthy yesterday, but here's this little issue now. Let's catch it early. And but the real-time blood scanners in the doctor's office, that seems to me to be a very conservative prediction. And I can see that happening in 10 years easy.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back on a time when you had to wait for those kinds of results, and it'll just seem bizarre. It'll be like if the doctor put a thermometer in your mouth and said, I'll give you your temperature next week, or...
it doesn't even make sense. What are you talking about?
Blood pressure in a few days, but I can't tell you, right? It's like these are real-time conditions that we're experiencing, and we want the technology to catch up and give us the answer in real time, too. How about this one, peer-to-peer health insurance? Now, this one kind of gets to the one I'm adding at the bottom, I think, a little bit, in that it addresses not the technology of delivery of care, but kind of it's more like the technology of, how we organize care as a society, right? How we make it more available. And this one immediately grab me. I don't know. I don't know, Stephen. How about you? Do you get a picture in your mind of how peer-to-peer health insurance would work?
No, not at all. And that's when I saw that in the outline, Phil, I was going, "What is he talking about?" So of course, I I Googled peer-to-peer health insurance, and what I got was basically a couple of articles on peer-to-peer health delivery,
which
is a little more like the coffee shopification we're about to talk about here towards the end of the show. But I don't really get a picture of that. How that even works. So, do you have an idea?
I'll say one thing right off the bat. It sounds good. I'm like, okay, any model of health insurance over what we have already sounds attractive, right? It's like, okay, well, there's probably something there.
It's sort of the opposite of it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, it's if it's massively broke, please fix it in any way possible.
One thing that for sure the last decade has shown us is that there are different ways of funding everything than what we used, than what we were used to in the world before that, in terms of, kind of crowdfunding projects or crowdfunding humanitarian causes, interesting, or like paying for getting work done is different today. You know, you can go on to Fiverr and get somebody to do something for you for $5, where before you'd have to go out and source a vendor and end up paying hundreds of dollars to get something done. I mean, so there are those kinds of hints at what something like that might look like, but I still don't immediately see it. So if
maybe it's something like this, Phil, that the decision of what to pay for is made closer to the patient and with more patient involvement. Okay, no, you can't have your bone marrow transplant. That kind of decision being handed down from, some faceless corporation, that's, 14 states away and it doesn't have, has no idea what's going on with your health. That, if decisions like that could be brought a little bit closer to the person and where there's an actual conversation that goes on at least between the doctor and the health insurance company, right?
Right.
And doctor, how important is this test and what's the chances of it actually, showing you something that is actionable? It's not all that important. We were just kind of checking on this or that. Well, under these circumstances, I think we're going to deny that. But over here where you're talking about this one other thing where, there's like a great chance of it helping and it's very much needed, of course we're going to approve that. Maybe it's something like that where you're bringing those decisions much closer to the patient.
It could be. And if you look at this next one, it seems like there's a connection there, right? Here he says FaceTime-like checkups or Skype-like checkups, we could say, for those who aren't all that apply. Skype-like checkups without needing a doctor's appointment, where you're just checking in with the doctor on something. You think about all this this data being made available in real time. You think about maybe real-time interaction with the doctor. And you almost start to picture this almost Uber-like approach to healthcare, right? This kind of like, well, there's a need, and there's a whole infrastructure out there towards addressing the need, and we're approaching addressing that need through that infrastructure in a completely different, more user empowered way than we were before. That kind of picture starts to emerge when you start adding some of these things up, I think.
Kind of an Uber model. I'm just imagining how that would look. Dr. Wilson wakes up in the middle of the night. He just, for whatever reason, he decides to get on up and log into his computer because he's just, he's not sleeping at that moment. And, he normally works at a clinic in Baltimore, but he logs into this Uber type application, right? And there are people all over the country at that particular hour, 3 a.m., that, would like to visit with a doctor kind of thing. You thinking about something like that? Is that kind of what you're suggesting
might
be a model?
It could be like that, yeah. On the one hand, you would then lose the personal relationship with the doctor idea, right? Because you're just,
you're getting whatever doctor happens to be up at that hour of the morning, maybe.
But on the other hand, whatever doctor is logged in on Christmas Eve,
or whenever you need a doctor.
There's a trade-off, and it could be that, like with Uber, the ultimate answer to that one is, you know, the driverless cars take over with Uber, and ultimately the AI doctors will take over with a model like that. But all of these ideas around, you know, FaceTime checkups, peer-to-peer, real-time blood scanners, they all speak to, as you and I were talking about before the show, kind of this de-industrialization of healthcare, kind of this de-infrastructurization of healthcare, which goes to your idea of, you know, in the future everything will be a coffee shop, where we live in this future where all the old baggage that went with so many processes, we talk about government, we talk about higher education, and I think it applies to healthcare as well. You don't need most of that baggage, and you find new ways of delivering those services that can be much more economical, and that can make those things massively more available than they were.
In this future, we're imagining a future basically where there's still hospitals filled, but maybe they're half the size that they used to be, and there are fewer of them because, quite frankly, the health problems are being caught much early, and there's just not as need for as many beds, right?
Absolutely. We're catching them sooner. People are getting treated for more things more frequently, and yeah, you need hospitals for emergencies and for things that have gone untended, right? Or things that just have reached that point where something like that has to happen. But that will be the exception. Hospitals will be the exception, and going to a physical doctor will ultimately become the exception in that kind of model. And I think that's that is an achievable future. I'm not sure that we get the full coffee shopification in 10 years, but all of these work us in that direction. And I think in a decade.
Yeah, I think we're on our way in 10 years. I think we're at the point we throw out these ideas and they sound just a little bit crazy now. I think in 10 years it'll be conventional wisdom, if not already here. You know.
Absolutely. One more on that end is the full-body physical health scanners offering instant AI medical diagnosis located in most pharmacies. I hope so. I hope they have that. What that would entail, because you picture, like, you walk into a, you know, it's like a TSA, right? You walk into this little tube, right, and it's just going to scan your whole body, you know. I'm getting a very Star Trek picture when I read this full-body physical health scanners, instant AI medical diagnosis located in most pharmacies. I think we'll see generation .001 of this in 10 years. I'm not sure that we'll have this whole thing in 10 years. What do you think?
I think so. And I think that, right now, you can go into your pharmacy and you sit in that little chair and they can take your blood pressure with that, you know, auto blood pressure machine, right, in a lot of pharmacies. And I think we get more and more advanced with what they can do in a pharmacy. And, you know, maybe it's less the coffee shopification. Maybe we should call it the pharmacification of medical care, how everything kind of moves towards the pharmacy model.
Yeah, well, it's the Walmartization. It's the Safewayization of it, right? Because you're
Everything you need is right there. You know, you can get your blood tested and get an immediate result. And then they decide exactly what you need, which is tailor made and printed for you right there in the pharmacy and handed to you, and you walk out.
Yep.
That's a pretty neat model. I like that.
I think we'll be close. And then finally, intra-aortal cameras for smartphones for DIY dental checkups. Okay, now here you go. This is a great idea. The do-it-yourself dental checkup is something I've long wanted. You know, when you know something's going on but you can't see it yourself, you don't have those little mirrors, you don't have the access to that kind of stuff. But Stephen, you had an over and above idea on this one, right?
Yeah. I was thinking to myself, well, hey, you know, rather than just stick your cell phone in your mouth and take a picture and send it to the dentist, what if the dentist had, a little more information? How about a Bluetoothed tooth? And, I thought I was making a joke, Phil. And then, of course, I said, well, let me Google this just to make sure someone's not working on it already. Someone's working on it already. The Bluetooth tooth. You go to Bluetooth.com, and that was like a lead story with them. And, you know, it has in it, this. They've already installed this particular tooth cap into 8 different people. And it has, and it can deliver information to the doctor about things like, you know, food ingested, whether a person is, you know, eating or, you know, moving around. You know, it's got an accelerometer in it. So you can probably, you know, this person's driving. We can see that that's happening. It's, you know, smoking, things like that. Just all, it can deliver all kinds of data to, you know, to the dentist or whomever, right?
This is, this is the perfect lead in to Wednesday's show, I think, right? Because this is the age of the tooth becomes the snitch, right? Right now you can go into the dentist and the dentist can say, how you been doing? Oh, pretty good, pretty good. You've been flossing? Yeah, you know, not too bad. You've been cutting down on the sugar? Oh, yeah, I definitely have. You know, and the teeth are going to be like, nope.
Yeah. Your dentist says, I'd like to call BS on everything you just said.
Your tooth and
throws it down.
Telling a very different story than the rest of your mouth. Okay, that's
worth it. This one particular tooth, its life is much different from the rest of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we got that. We got that to look forward to. This has been fun, and we're going to carry this right on into our amazing show on Wednesday when we talk about the Internet of Things. Stephen, great. Great talking about healthcare with you. Look forward to talking about the next topic with you on Wednesday. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.